where marriage is made and love lasts. Welcome to Marriage Unhindered with Doug Hinderer. Relationship problems? No problem. Give us a call, 888-914-9149. Need a second opinion? That's 888-914-9149. This is Marriage Unhindered. Here's your host, Doug Hinderer.
Good Saturday morning. It is good to be with you. Welcome to Marriage Unhindered. I'm your host, Doug Hinderer. I'm here to help you live married life as God intended it and give you some help in those areas where you might be struggling. Bottom line here, the show is designed to help you sanctify your marriage, to use your marriage to grow in holiness and to live it as God had designed it. Marriage doesn't have to be perfect to be wonderful. No marriage is perfect, but having a wonderful marriage is very possible. This is not therapy. This is education. Some of the issues we may get into may be too complex to fully, you know, take care of in the show. Or perhaps your problem is too complex to heal on your own. I want to encourage people in those situations to consider therapy for these difficult situations. There's wonderful science out there on how to heal marriages, and there are some very wonderfully competent and caring, compassionate therapists out there to help you as well. The show is under the protection of our Blessed Mother, Undoer of Knots, and we always begin with a prayer to her in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Blessed Mother, take into your hands the knots that affect married couples, and with your long fingers of love and grace, undo these knots for the glory of God. Visit married couples with your grace, renew their sacramental covenant, increase God's love in them, and strengthen their bond of peace, so that with their children, they may always rejoice in the gift of your blessing. Amen. All right, we're going to tackle kind of a topic that can be painful for a lot of folks. And today we're going to talk about what to do if you're in a marriage with a spouse who is emotionally unavailable. It's an issue a lot of folks struggle with. We often don't feel well-loved in our marriages. So does your spouse seem emotionally clueless, detached, indifferent? Does it feel like they just don't care? Do you feel unloved at times? Well, we're going to unpack all of that today. Unfortunately, people often in a loveless marriage often blame themselves. They ask, well, why am I so unlovable? What's wrong with me? Why can't my spouse really love me? And maybe if I, you know, and then fill in the blank, right? If I was taller or shorter or better looking, or if I made more money, if there was something different about me, maybe my spouse would love me. Maybe it's my fault that my spouse is emotionally unavailable. That can be really painful, and it can really mess with your self-confidence. So we're going to talk about that today and help you kind of look at this thing through the right lens. But before we get started, I mean, I'm taking your calls, 888-914-9149, or you can email me at doug@marriageunhindered.com. And don't forget about the marriageunhindered.com website where you can access past shows and my marriage tune-up workshop. I want to take just a minute to talk about that workshop. I designed that workshop. You know, the goal is to help you move your marriage to the next highest level, to help you breathe new life into your marriage. It's self-paced. There's 12 modules. Each module, I talk for 5 to 7 minutes to introduce a skill or a conversation that you need to have. And at the end of each module, there's a worksheet to help you go deeper into that concept or into that conversation. There's 3 broad topics that we handle in the workshop: how to handle conflicts in your marriage, how to nurture and grow your love in the marriage, and how to practice forgiveness. You get access to the workshop for a full year. So for everyone listening today, and I want to remind everybody, it's Saturday, but this is live programming. This show is live. It's not a rebroadcast. So to thank all of you for tuning in and listening, if you purchase the course in the next 48 hours and type in the code word Doug, that's my name, you will receive a 20% discount as my thank you to you for tuning into the show. So that is marriageunhindered.com, discount code Doug for 20% discount on the workshop. All right, let's jump into emotional unavailability. What is it? Well, emotional unavailability, that's a tongue twister, refers to someone who doesn't respond to your emotional needs or cares. An emotionally unavailable man or woman has persistent difficulty expressing or handling emotions and getting emotionally close to other people. They tend to lack the ability to be emotionally intimate. They're not comfortable feeling their own emotions, sharing those emotions, or being present and responsive to other people's emotions. This is a really important point. These people struggle with all emotion, theirs and yours, and it's their problem, not yours. But not only are they not emotionally present for you, they have a really hard time being emotionally present for themselves as well. They find it very challenging to talk about their feelings. They often say, "I don't know," when you ask them how they're feeling, and they mean it. And I run into this in a lot of sessions with the couples I work with, and I'll turn to the husband and say, "Well, how does that feel to hear your wife say that she's lonely in this marriage?" And often they'll look at me and say, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that." And they're not lying. They really don't know. So people that are emotionally unavailable, think of, Dr. Spock from Star Trek or Gregory House on House MD. And I never watched House MD too often, but I do remember a few episodes back in the day. And yeah, he didn't relate to people emotionally at all. He was kind of like Dr. Spock. So, all right. So what are the characteristics of someone who is emotionally unavailable? So first, number one, they avoid intimacy. Someone who's emotionally unavailable fears intimacy. They fear sharing their innermost feelings and thoughts, even with you, their spouse. They're very uncomfortable being vulnerable. This leads them to distance themselves from their own emotional experiences, which makes it almost impossible to engage with others in a way that has emotional intimacy or depth. They are scared. They are afraid of being hurt, and so they tend not to let anyone get too close, which means they often struggle with physical affection, which can be pretty difficult in a marriage, right? But it's difficult for them even to hold your hand or to give you a hug. Eye contact may be very difficult because when they're looking at you and you're looking at them, that means they have to engage, and engaging could all of a sudden lead to an emotional conversation. And man, that just paralyzes me, right? Since they usually lack physical intimacy, you can tend to blame yourself. Like, what's wrong with me? Why won't they be more intimate? Do not blame yourself. So number one, they tend to avoid intimacy. Two, they avoid commitment. Commitment is often difficult for someone who is emotionally unavailable. You may have dated for a long time. They may not have seemed in any kind of hurry to get married. And so pay attention if you're dating someone and for a long time and they don't seem to be moving towards marriage. Perhaps this is someone who is emotionally unavailable and unable to make a commitment. Fear of commitment shows up oftentimes as well in daily life, even after they've made the commitment to marriage. So they can avoid things like date nights or weekend getaways, unless there's other people around. So one-on-one time with you, whether it's a date night or a nice vacation, can be very difficult. And they try to avoid one-on-one situations where they're going to feel trapped, which may require emotional vulnerability. Right? They avoid intimacy. They avoid commitment. And they get defensive easily. Someone who is emotionally unavailable rarely initiates conversations that involve discussing relationship dynamics or hurt feelings or requests that they do something different. Conversations about emotions are just flat out too scary. An emotionally unavailable partner tends to respond in defensive ways, or they might blame you for their problems. They find trusting others to be very difficult. Or they may use anger to keep you away. Anger really shuts down closeness. It is really effective to put some distance between me and you. It's a great way to avoid being vulnerable. I have a couple that I just stopped working with after just a few sessions. And this was the way that the husband protected himself from getting too close to his partner. And I used the word partner because they weren't married yet. But my hunch was that for him, marriage was just too big of a commitment. He was too scared about that, too scared to be vulnerable. And every session that I had with them was characterized by the guy losing his temper in the first 5 minutes and then not backing down from that. And he just, and that's how he kept his partner, his fiance, and me at arm's length. So we couldn't get close to him. We couldn't help figure out what was going on because of his anger. So anger is a great defense mechanism for people who don't want to get too close emotionally. Number four, they often aren't available for you, period. I mean, if you tell them you need them, emotionally unavailable people tend to run the other way. I mean, sometimes literally they will disappear and you can't find them, right? I mean, when you're going through a rough time or simply want to talk, they aren't there because they get overwhelmed by your raw emotions. Or if they do stick around, they may tend to minimize your emotions. They're so uncomfortable with emotions that they often try to change the subject or they just withdraw from the conversation. They'll say things like, well, you know, it's not that big a deal. I think you're worried about nothing. Just kind of let it go because they don't want to actually, they can't just be there for you emotionally because they're not there for themselves emotionally. So it's really difficult for them to have deep conversations. Almost impossible. It's just too scary. And they find it difficult to empathize with your feelings. Because they turn off their emotions, they have really poor insight into what's going on in their inner world. They exhibit low empathy. They just don't have the ability to understand or to share your feelings. Since an emotionally unavailable person isn't comfortable exploring their own emotions, they may not be able to relate to you. They may not be able to put themselves in your shoes. They may not be able to consider your feelings when making a decision. You need empathy and they can't deliver. In fact, they find it really hard to even be in the same room. Not with you, but with your emotion. That's the key thing. This doesn't necessarily mean they don't care about you, but they don't have the emotional capacity to identify or to honor what you need. So, you know, they're inability to explore their own emotional world leads to a lack of personal insight on their part and ultimately the inability to attune to your feelings. The sad fact of emotionally unavailable people is they are living in a desert prison. They are living in a world without emotion and they are prisoners there in their own world. So we have a lot to tackle in this, but before we do that, we've got a couple callers. Let's go out to Shannon in Colorado Springs. Good morning, Shannon.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am, I can. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. My question is, I'm engaged right now. We're just under 90 days from our wedding. And my anxiety, my main question is, I want to know that I'm doing God's will by following through with the marriage. But my anxiety is just getting really the best of me. Mm. Sometimes even when I speak to him on the phone, I get so, someone who is like verbally abusive or anything like that. I don't know.
So you've got kind of this
two, scriptures.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Right when we went into marriage prep, we were asked to pull scripture out of a hat, and mine that I pulled was "Let your yes mean yes." So I let that drive me for a long time. And then more recently, when I was kind of going through this like anxious time, so we're getting married on May 31st, 5/31, and I went through this list and I saw the great mystery, and I thought, okay.
Are you there, Shannon?
And so this, like, a man will leave his father and mother, and the two shall be joined, and made one. So I just think, you know, is this God or is my anxiety God? I don't know.
Yeah. So, but you've got this gut feeling that maybe something isn't quite right. Would you describe it like that?
Well, you know, I guess my gut feeling might be thinking, you know, what if this isn't your vocation, or what if there is a different man out there that will fit you even better than this one does?
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. Me and my fiance, we share our faith and we share our political beliefs and our moral beliefs. But there's just other things that we kind of don't agree on, or activities that I enjoy that we don't, that he doesn't necessarily enjoy as much as I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just wonder, like, you know, is this going to affect us in the long run?
So let me ask you this anxiety that you have, does it show up in other areas of your life as well? Do you struggle with anxiety, you know, at work or with other friends, or anxiety about money or anything?
I'd say I can get anxious about money, but not to the extent that I'm feeling it in this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then at work, I just don't really enjoy my job. I guess there's like a little anxiety there.
All right. And so tell me, how long have you dated?
We had been together for about 9 months. We were engaged. That was back in May. And so we're just about 18 months into this.
Okay. All right. And have you had much experience dating other guys before him?
I had a lot of experience. Okay. I don't know if it was necessarily good experience, but yeah, I did date a lot.
Okay, good. All right, so you've had other experience, though. And I think, you know, the magic number generally is 24 months. Couples who date for at least 24 months before they get married have a lower divorce rate than people who date less than that. But, you know, I mean, I got married after, I think it was not more than 18 months. I think maybe it's 16, and it's worked out pretty well for 43 years. So I guess a couple of thoughts. You know, I can't tell you what to do. I can tell you that a lot of the couples I've worked with, one of them has said, you know, I knew this was a mistake. I just couldn't stop it. I had this gut feeling that said, man, something's not right. And I didn't slow things down. And I thought, well, we'll just work it out after we're married. That generally is not a good idea. On the other hand, of course, there's going to be anxiety when you decide to get married, because you're saying till death do us part. It's the biggest decision you will ever make in your entire life.
Yes, that very much echoes in my mind.
And so of course you're going to be scared of that. Of course you'll be scared of that. But part of it is this idea of, you know, agape love, right? Can I love this man unconditionally? And can he love me unconditionally? And I think, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I did a show on how to pick a good spouse, what to look for. So you may want to go back into the archives of this show.
Okay.
And check that out, because there's some guidelines in there on what to look for and what love is all about. And, you know, part of the question is, you know, do you want to have his children? Do you see your future the same? Do you see that this is the guy you want to have, you know, by your side as all of the storms and tempests of life show up for the next 50 years? Can we do this thing together? And that's an important thing to consider as well. So I would encourage you to give this more prayer and more thought. It's a prayerful thing. And so spending time, of course, in an adoration chapel, asking for God to shine light on this is a really helpful thing. And if you really, the closer you get to May 31st, the harder it is to put the brakes on. And if you feel it's moving too fast, you may want to think about just taking a pause. Nothing wrong with saying, you know what, let's put this thing off another 6 months just to be sure. I think there's great wisdom in that. So prayer and pause if you need to, and maybe check out my podcast from a couple weeks back on dating and how to find a good spouse. All right.
I will do that.
Good.
Do you think there's any merit to those scriptures?
You know what? Well, are there merit to the scriptures? Yes. But is it kind of like this magical thing where God's going to send me a message when I pick a scripture out of the hat? I don't think so. I wouldn't read more into that than that's just what came out and it's something to pray about. And, you know, let your yes be yes. I agree with that. But that on your wedding day is when you're saying yes. Up until then, mm-hmm. you still are free to say, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but now maybe not so much. So I wouldn't I wouldn't assume that God's sending you a message by just picking out those two scriptures for sure.
Okay.
All right. So, Shannon, thank you. I need to get to a break, but hold on, because my 20% discount on my marriage discernment workshop. Our producer, hold on, and he's going to sweeten that for you. So I appreciate you calling in, Shannon, and good luck on your discernment. All right, so we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how, you know, what the causes are of emotional unavailability in a spouse and then how to deal with that. So stay tuned. A lot more good content.
Life ain't always pretty. Something else sometimes, but it's the good and bad and living that makes you feel alive. It's the killing yourself trying to make a dream come true, and it's the feeling like you're flying the moment that you do. You gotta know the halfway empty to know the halfway full. No, life ain't always pretty, but ain't it beautiful?
There you go. Life ain't always pretty, but ain't it beautiful? And it'd probably be better just to listen to the rest of that song rather than have me sit here talking. I would enjoy that more personally, but here we are. All right, we're back. So we're talking about emotionally unavailable spouses, right? Is your spouse not there when you most need them? Man, is it frustrating? Is it lonely? Taking your calls, 888-914-9149, or email me at doug@marriageunhindered.com. So listen, what does it take to live with someone who's emotionally unavailable? Well, it helps if we really understand the causes of emotional unavailability, and there's a few of them. Like most things in the mental health world, there are likely many causes for emotional unavailability in adults, but the primary one seems that it stems from dysfunctional attachment styles and early parent-childhood relationship trauma. So these emotionally damaged people got started on that path very early in life, in the first weeks, perhaps, of life. So generally what happens is the first, you know, caregivers play a huge role in the development of emotional intimacy and availability, and to developing good emotional available skills. And when that doesn't happen, it leads to all kinds of problems. And so the at the top of the list is neglect, failing to provide the baby with safe emotional connections and safe, secure bonds with primarily the mother. When caregivers deny affection or emotional support, or they're not available to provide a safe emotional environment, children may not learn how to be emotionally available and vulnerable. I had a client that I worked with a number of years ago, a young man, and he came in the very first day, and I said, "Hey, so why are you here?" He said, "Well, my wife told me I got to come in because I'm all screwed up." I'm like, "Okay, why does your wife think you're all messed up?" And he said, "Well, because she says, I don't know how to love people." And I'm like, "Ah, why would she say that?" And he said, "Listen," he said, I love my wife and I love our two kids, but I don't feel love. I don't know how to feel the emotion of love. And I come home from work, and if they're there, that's great. And if they're not there, I don't miss them, you know? Or if they decide they want to go for a walk, I don't miss them when they're gone, and I don't really feel the need to go with them. I mean, I love them. If the house was on fire, I'd go in and save them, but I don't feel the emotion of love. And I thought, man, that's tough. And so we started working together, and in a few weeks, we kind of unpacked what had happened for this young man. And the sad story is his mother died when he was 3 months old. She had a brain aneurysm, and that was it. And she died very tragically, very suddenly. Two of his aunts stepped up and said, "Hey, we will care for this young guy during the week. And then on the weekends, Dad, when you're not at work, you can have him back." And so he spent the first literally 4 years of his life between three different caregivers every single week, and he never learned how to form a close attachment bond with any one of them. And as a result, he'd never learned really how to love. And I still clearly remember that session when we kind of got to that aha moment, and he looked up at me and his eyes filled with tears, and he said, "I get it. I understand it. Now what do I do? How do I fix this?" And man, that's tough work. And we're going to talk in a minute about how to fix it if that's your situation. But oftentimes, emotionally vulnerable people got their start through no fault of their own early in life. So neglect is number one cause. Number two is abuse, especially in the early years, right? If the child grows up to see the world as a dangerous place, the way I protect myself is by shutting down my emotions. If I don't care, then you can't hurt me. And so I learn how not to care. And it could be physical abuse. More likely, though, it's emotional abuse or living in a world where it's just constant criticism, just constant devaluing and being put down and being told you're not good enough. Overprotection is another one. I think this is a real kind of danger in our society with, you know, helicopter moms and Zamboni machine moms who smooth the ice in front of the kids so they never fall down and never skin up a knee, right? If mom or dad, you know, takes care of everything, the child never experiences anything negative in their life, they're never going to learn how to deal with negative emotion. And there's a lot of negative emotion in adulthood. Overprotection. Or growing up in a home where they're not allowed to talk about negative emotions, where they keep the emotions buried. I had one client I worked with really struggling with this, and he was, I don't know what he was, probably 10 around there, when his grandmother died, and no one was allowed to talk about it. They came home from the funeral, and that was the last time anybody ever mentioned her name. No grieving, no talking about difficult emotion. And as an adult, this guy really struggled with negative emotions. And then something that happens in the middle years, I think, often is feeling rejected or unpopular with peers, right? So bullying, cyberbullying, real issue these days. If I don't care if you like me, you can't hurt me, right? So I'm not going to get my heart, or if you got your heart broken early, right, in the dating, you know, your first high school sweetheart broke your heart or in college. So I need to protect myself by keeping everybody at arm's length, right? So staying emotionally distant serves as a self-protective device. It's how I keep myself from getting hurt. If I don't feel, then I won't get hurt. And if I don't feel too close to you, then you can't hurt me. So here's the common theme in all of this. Emotionally unavailable people have a brokenness in them that wasn't their fault. And it's not your fault that they can't love you better. This was a course set from them almost certainly from early childhood. So, all right, let's take a pause there before we go into what you can do if you're living with an emotionally distant spouse and what you can do if you are an emotionally distant spouse. Before we do that, let's take a call. Let's go out to Bridget in Pennsylvania. Good morning, Bridget.
Good morning.
Good morning. What can I do for you?
Well, I was calling because my son and his wife have two small children. It was really abrupt. We did not see anything coming. I know my son said to me he feels that he's done everything he possibly could to try and save the marriage, that his wife just does not want it anymore. Yeah. And I said they have two small children. And I feel like he said, you know, just stay out of it. I don't need you guys getting involved. We did just say to them, you know, God, you guys got married in a Catholic church. You took a vow. It was forever. God won't look fondly on, you know, breaking a vow. And your two small children really, you know, need you guys to be together. And he's like, he feels like there's nothing he could do that, you know, she doesn't want it. Yeah. And so we have kind of just stayed out, stayed quiet, tried not to get involved. I just don't know if that's the right thing for us to do.
Yeah, for sure. How long were they married?
6 years.
And when they got married, when they were dating, how did you feel about the relationship? Did you think it was a good one, or did you have some worries even back then?
I didn't have any worries, although we really didn't get to meet her much before they got engaged. She didn't bring her around. I didn't know much about the relationship, and then boom. We met her family, a very nice family, and then it was they got engaged, and then the marriage got planned pretty quickly. I know her mom, you know, kind of was like in the planning mode, like 3 weeks after they were engaged, you know, they had the hall, everything was picked and falling into place. Mm-hmm. It seemed too good to be true. It seemed like a really wonderful situation.
Yeah. And any clue is all? Is your son giving you any hints at all as to why the wife was so dissatisfied, so unhappy?
No. I know her, unfortunately, her father had had an affair on the mom. And then she had shared with me, my dad cheated on my mom with the same woman 10 years ago. And so that happened. Mm. And it was shortly after that that everything fell apart.
Yeah.
I know when that had happened, her mom, unfortunately, you know, had an attempt to end her life.
Oh, my.
And everything worked out. He moved out with the girlfriend. And then a couple months later, he moved back in with his wife again.
Okay.
My son said he felt like she was traumatized by that course.
Oh, yeah.
And that he had originally said, you know, I don't want our kids around your dad, you know, this isn't a good situation. But and she got upset at that. And I said, I think it's just something that will settle in time. Of course, he's your father and he's going to be in your life. I said, I think he was just upset at the pain that it caused the family, you know, your mom and everyone, that he was trying to protect you. And that's what he did say to me. He said, I'm her husband. I have to protect her heart. And that's why he said that.
Yeah, I got
it. Eventually he got softer with everything. So okay. We were dumbfounded. We did not see this blindsided,
yeah.
I should say.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, thank you for that, Bridget. I my thought is, listen, you know, it takes two to make a marriage work and only one to end it. And it sounds like your son really wants to work on it, and his wife has decided, at least at this point, not to. And there's not much you're going to be able to do with that. I think what needs to happen, my advice would be rally around your son. He's going to need a lot of support and help and encouragement from you. He's going to need help caring for those two small children, however that works out in terms of custody, et cetera. And just be there to support him and to love him. And then pray a lot, right? And so these stories, like your daughter-in-law's father who leaves, does some pretty terrible things, and then comes back, reconciliation's possible. So I think you're going to get there with a lot of prayer. So I would encourage you to support your son as much as possible and pray a lot for reconciliation. So thank you for your call. Hold on. Don't hang up, because for calling in, I've got a special additional discount for you on my marriage tune-up workshop, which you may come up with some interesting ideas there that you could share with your son and daughter-in-law should they start to come back together again. All right. Thank you for the call. Let's take a break. We come back. We're going to talk about how to live with a spouse who's emotionally distant and what to do if you're the spouse who's emotionally distant, how you can get reconnected with your emotions. I'm taking your call, 888-914-9149, or email me, doug@marriageunhindered.com. Be back in a few. That's the mindset you got to have if you're married to someone who's emotionally distant, emotionally unavailable. I'm not going to run away. I'm just not going to run away. So a couple of thoughts here on how to live with a spouse who's emotionally distant. First, number one, be patient. Realize your spouse is broken. They were hurt very deeply in life, probably long before they met you. And they see all relationships as pretty dangerous. And in fact, the mere fact that you got through that to the point of them feeling safe enough to marry you is a huge testimony to you and to your quality as a spouse and to the love that you brought into your spouse's life, that they felt safe enough to even make that decision. And so, you know, they protect themselves by avoiding getting too close or too vulnerable. But think about it in terms of if your spouse had a broken leg, would you get angry at them if they couldn't keep up with you when you go for a walk? No, you wouldn't. You'd slow down. You'd walk a lot slower than you want to because of that broken leg. And I think that metaphor can help if you're married to someone who's emotionally distant, is they've got a broken gear, that the gear in their brain that handles emotions is broken. So slow down with them. Go at their emotional pace. So be patient. Two, I'd say don't take it personally. This does not mean that you are not lovable. This is not your fault. Although you are suffering in this marriage, to be certain, it's not your fault. Don't take it personally. It's not, there's nothing wrong with you. Try to create an atmosphere of safety. See, for mostly distant people, it's all about danger and the need for safety. And the only way I know how to find safety is to withdraw into my own world and not to stick my neck out of the shell, right? I keep it in. So the ability to love them for who they are, to love them in spite of their defects, to love them as God loves them, with all of their wonderful qualities and with their shortcomings as well. Okay. Their life is a prison, very much an emotional prison that they can't, self-imposed, that they can't get out of. The only way they escape that prison is through feeling safe with you. You are the one person in the world that they most need to feel safe with. And this is so hard for you to do because you feel so alone sometimes and so frustrated that you just want to yell and scream. I get it. You want to just grab them and shake them and say, why aren't you here for me? I need you. Why can't you be what I need you to be? But you hold the key to them being able to live a better life. And I know that puts a lot of pressure on you to set your emotional needs aside, at least for a while, with no guarantee that your spouse is ever going to be able to come back and meet those needs. I get it. And I get the feeling of the unfairness that's involved in it. This isn't fair. Why, you know, I'm giving all this love and I'm getting almost nothing in return. It's not fair. And now I've got to do the work. I've got to be the one with the patience. I've got to be the one who's long suffering. Boy, that doesn't seem fair. And you know what? It's probably not, but it is what it is. And there's an awful lot of unfairness in the world. And in just, I don't know what, 3 weeks, we're going to commemorate one of the most unfair things that ever happened on the planet, that God himself was killed and hung on a cross. And nothing was fair about that, but yet he did that out of love for us. And I think that's a good way to think about being able to love someone who doesn't do a good job of loving us back. Four, understand your spouse's needs to be alone at times. That's the way probably, they process what's going on in their world. And it's not a rejection of you, but it's a, I've got to go away to think about this, because I can't think well when my heart is pumping because I'm in an emotionally vulnerable place. And so you need to be able to allow them to have their space, validate their feelings, do things that will increase their feelings of safety, and tell them that you understand. And this is where, again, the patience comes in, et cetera. And then you want to avoid any kind of controlling behavior. Avoid any kind of criticism. Otherwise, they may withdraw further into their shell. If they feel unsafe or unloved, they will shut down, right? Your disappointment in them paralyzes them because they don't want you to be disappointed in them. They want you to be perfectly happy. They don't know how to do it. They don't know how to give you what you need, but your unhappiness is paralyzing for them. I think last thing I'd say on this is ask, well, maybe I got a couple things, but ask them, you know, how they want to be loved. How can I love you? What do you need from me? Now, you might well hear the words, I don't know. And they'd be telling the truth, at which point then you may need to come up with some suggestions. Like, you know, if I do this for you, will it make you happy? Have I ever done anything for you that brought some joy into your life? What else can I do? I mean, think about times where you were happy with me or I did things that pleased you. And what were those things? Because I would like to do more of those things because I want to try to help bring some joy and happiness into your life. And then doing that, I think it's helpful if you use I statements. And I talk a lot about what I call the formula for talking about difficult emotions. And it's a three-part formula. Starts with the words, I feel. And then the next phrase is, when you. And then third, I'd like to ask you to please. What is you'd like him to do different? So I think you can help your spouses learn how to meet your emotional need if you use that formula, right? And it's a way to communicate what you need without it really rising to the level of criticism or complaint. And so you say, listen, I feel lonely when I ask you to sit and spend some time with me and you don't do that. And I'd like to ask you to please try to, I promise I won't be too threatening, but if you could just stay and just, you know, put your arm around me for a minute and all I need is a minute and then I'll be okay and you can go on your way but I'll feel better, right? So, you know, realize that they most likely love you a great deal, but they just can't show it. And they can't show it in a way that you want to receive it. And they can't show it in a way that you deserve to be shown. So you need to coach them to be able to love you better. And you do that with the phrases, I feel, when you, and I'd like to ask you to please. All right, so listen, I know I'm asking you to do an awful lot, a lot of difficult things emotionally here when you're not getting much in return. But, you know, I don't know, that's the deal. That's how that works. So what do you do if you're the one in the marriage who's emotionally unavailable? If you're the one who just can't connect, if you're the one who just doesn't seem to know how to love your spouse or your children like the young man I was talking about earlier. Well, first step is explore the root cause. If you are coping with trauma from childhood or past relationships, get help with a licensed counselor, with a licensed therapist who can help you unpack these wounds so you can begin to heal them. Sometimes these wounds are so deep, you are not going to get them fixed on your own. You're trying to do that. You're trying and you are dealing with these wounds, with these injuries, the best way you know how. The problem is the best way you know how is to withdraw and to not be with other people. And that is really hurting the people that you live with and that you love so much. So do not be afraid to get help. Don't be embarrassed. Get help. This is what therapists do. We help people heal childhood wounds. Number two, reflect on the patterns that replay in your relationships. You know, ask yourself why you find it so hard to open up. What is the fear that is paralyzing you? Fear plays a very large role in your struggles to connect, okay? And it's just fear is at the core of this thing. Number three, increase your self-compassion and your self-forgiveness. When you are comfortable with your own imperfections, you will find it easier to accept your spouse's imperfections as well. It may not be your fault that you find emotional vulnerability scary. That doesn't mean you have to stay there. You can say, you know what, I'm moving on and I'm putting this behind me and I'm going to up my game. And practice opening up. Keep a journal, right? Write things down. Print out a list of emotions. You get the emotion wheels on the internet. Type in emotion wheel. You get a ton of emotions. And you can use it to help you figure out what you're feeling. Talk to your spouse. Ask him or her to help you identify what emotions you seem to be showing. Perhaps you can begin by sharing your emotions in writing with your spouse. Write them on a note and say, here's what I've been thinking. What do you think if it's too hard to even open up and talk about that? So there you go. That's what I advise if you are struggling yourself to be emotionally available. Let's go to Michael in San Diego as we hit the home stretch here. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. Thanks. How are you?
I'm awesome. I'm driving. I'm pulling over to be more respectful so I can speak to you better.
Very good. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm in the same boat that you're talking about. My wife left me 2 years ago. She says I hit her. I never raised a hand. She was sexually abused by her grandfather in early childhood.
Okay.
Her mom was overprotective and they divorced early. I'm wondering, is it too late, sir?
It's never too late. Sounds like she's got, though, a lot of trauma in her early years. How long were you married, Michael?
5 years.
Married 5 years. Any children?
None.
Okay. And do you still talk to her from time to time? What's your relationship like now?
As soon as I put cameras up in the house, she refused to talk to me any longer.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that doesn't sound real optimistic. I think, you know, prayer is really important. Sounds like she could use some professional help to deal with these demons from her childhood.
She never sought help.
Yeah.
She never sought help. I've sent her list after list of counselors. She refuses to acknowledge she received them. I sent them to her brother. I sent them through our pastor.
Okay. Yeah. Has she actually filed for divorce? Is there a divorce here, or is it just a separation at this point?
I'm in California. She moved to Utah, and we are now in the mediation stage of divorce.
Okay. All right. So it's still moving forward. I think what I'd say, Michael, is stay the course, right? Continue to try to reach out to her. You know, as I said to the earlier caller, it takes two to make a marriage work, only one to end it. Sounds like a lot of her childhood trauma is showing up in your relationship, and she's not able to get past it. She's decided to move on and do other things. I'm sorry about that. One of the hardest things in my line of work is when one of the two says, you know what, I'm just done working on it and I'm not doing it anymore. And once they get to that point, sometimes they come back, but those fall under the heading of a miracle. And miracles come as a result of prayer. All right. I wish I had a better answer for you. I want you to hang on though. I want to give you extra encouragement on my marriage tune-up course. Not that you're in a marriage that you could tune up, but you might get some ideas in there about how you can talk to your wife in ways that might resonate with her, in ways that, you know, where she might be lonely, where she might be hurting, where you might be able to give her some comfort. So I'm sorry for your pain, Michael. I appreciate your call, though. So we've only got a couple minutes left. And so I just want to remind everybody about my marriage discernment workshop on my website. And in gratitude for listening today and for being a part of this, I want to offer you all a 20% discount on the workshop. And that is on the Marriage Unhindered website. And type in the code word Doug, and you will get a 20% discount. So I hope if today's program, if you're living with someone who's emotionally unavailable, or if you are emotionally unavailable, you've gotten some encouragement and perhaps some hope that there are brighter days to come. And that there is, you don't have to suffer, but if you do suffer in this, that's not a bad thing, because we unite our sufferings with Christ, and that's how we, you know, earn the currency to purchase heaven. And I like a quote from St. Teresa of Avila, who said, "Trust God that you are exactly where you are meant to be." You know, Christ didn't come to this earth to remove our suffering. He came to teach us how to redeem our suffering. And when you're married to an emotionally distant person, there's some suffering there. St. Ignatius of Loyola said, "If God caused you to suffer much, it is a sign that he certainly intends to make you a saint." Sit with that thought for a moment. And so listen, Marriage Unhindered, we're here to help you sanctify your marriage. I'm here every Saturday at 11 a.m. I will look forward to talking with you again next week. Have a wonderful week.